You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
What we're dealing with here is a total lack of respect for the law.
You're listening to Done by Law, brought to you by the Federation of Community Legal Centres.
Welcome to Done by Law on 3CR 855 AM, and also welcome to those listening via various podcast platforms or via streaming on 3cr.org.au. You're with Jimmy tonight, just me in the studio with our special guest about to dial in. It's just after 6pm on Tuesday, the 2nd of December, 2025. We start tonight's show, as always, by acknowledging the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, the original custodians of the land that 3CR broadcasts from. We pay our respects to elders, past and present, and extend that respect to any First Nations listeners tuning in today. On top of this acknowledgement, I'd like to also, given today's topic, which we'll get into shortly, read an excerpt from the preamble of the treaty to be discussed as a topic of tonight's show. The place we now call Victoria holds the oldest living cultures on Earth, a truth that belongs to all Victorians and a legacy to uphold with pride. Victoria today is shared by many cultures, each adding to the richness of its story. One of Victoria's greatest strengths is its courage to face the truth, to listen with open hearts, and to move forward with honesty. Yet the relationship between First Peoples and the state of Victoria has been profoundly shaped by colonisation and its enduring harm. Our shared history bears the weight of injustice, dispossession, disruption of country, and acts that sought to erase First Peoples and silence cultures. We stand together committed to a better future, one that is just, fair and equitable and honours the rightful place of First Peoples. Treaty is how we make that future possible. This statewide treaty marks a new beginning, an invitation to walk forward together, guided by truth, integrity and determination. Through treaty, we build a better future for all. That is just an excerpt of the preamble of what is a very powerful document in this state, and I encourage all listeners to go have a read of that if you have not already. All the more relevant for tonight's topic, as in October, a landmark bill passed through the Victorian Parliament to enable Australia's first treaty between First Peoples and government. This treaty was signed in mid-November and will commence on 12 December this year. Tonight's guest to discuss all this is Narita Waite. Narita is a proud Yorta and Wurundjeri woman, the CEO of Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service, and a member of Victoria's First Peoples Assembly. Narita has played a key role in the treaty process, and we wished to ask her on to the show tonight to find out more about what led up to this historic moment, what will come next, and what this means for the ongoing fight for justice and self-determination of Victoria's First Peoples. Welcome to the show, Narita.
Thank you for having me, Jimmy.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for coming on. Why don't we talk about yourself for a second? I wanted to start by asking what treaty means to you and why it's so important.
Look, I think the preamble that you read out kind of speaks to the importance of treaty, and if people can, I think reading it in its entirety, and particularly the first section of the treaty, is really important to understand how we got to where we are, the path that our ancestors walked, and the steps that we as a community have taken to realise this first statewide treaty. But at the heart of why I do what I do is because it's hard to see that despite enduring colonisation, assimilation and all of these policies and approaches that the government have took, that we still have struggled to have any degree of self-determination in decision-making for our communities. And whether that be in areas like education and housing and those all, whether it be the tough end, like law and order, which is the space that I work in day to day. And that's the reason why I stood as an assembly member, and the reason why I was one of five negotiators who wanted to ensure not only did we have a strong treaty, one that laid an infrastructure for the future, but one that had a high degree of accountability, not just in terms of the state being accountable for its commitments, but us, the assembly, being accountable for our commitments to community. Because this is truly the opportunity to reset the relationship and to transform the state of Victoria into a place that we all want to live.
Yeah, I think there's already a million questions I want to pick up on from what you've said there. But I think kind of the most important thing for me is that people actually, Victorians of all backgrounds, go and actually read this thing. Because after all the misinformation that we've heard nationwide about treaty processes, to actually read it and realise how it's actually, you know, a uniting document for all of us in many ways, and also very... I guess basic in what it's asking for, which we can get into this show. But are you able to explain to us the significance of this moment and what the next steps in the process will be from here going forward? Obviously, once again, this is all contained in the treaty. It's very, very clear and user-friendly in that sense. But for our listeners, what's coming next from this huge momentous occasion?
Yeah, first I can connect kind of the thread from the previous question to this one. I think when we talk about it being very important for every Victorian, it is because statewide treaties isn't just about resetting the relationship between Aboriginal Victorians and non-Aboriginal Victorians, but it's about creating that fairer and more prosperous future for us all, one where we're not having to invest in carceral and heavy-handed approaches, but one where we're investing in things that make a positive difference to our lives, like making sure there's adequate housing supply, and like making sure that we have a well-resourced and appropriate healthcare system, including, of course, social emotional well-being, health. And if I can just, I suppose, highlight why this is something that drives us all together. My mum, when she was four, she was counted in after the 1967 referendum. But by that time, she'd already lost her mum. My nan never saw the 1967 referendum. She had died some years prior. But my mum hasn't lived to see this treaty. She died when she was 52 back in 2014. So we've lost a lot along this road. There's only emphasised why we want to transform this relationship and reorientate priorities into things that make this a safer and better Victoria for us all. And the statewide treaty, which has obviously passed Parliament and has also been signed by the Premier and our co-chairs, enshrines some core treaty commitments into legislation. So at the centre is obviously the continuation of the First People's Assembly of Victoria, but also two important kind of arms of the Belly Wall are now Nyingma Nangyawarra, which is the Independent Accountability Mechanism, and Nirna Yuruk Telkuna, which is our permanent truth-telling body. And the Belly Wall, which kind of describes all of those, the connection of those arms all together, enables us to have a more meaningful access to government, make representations to government on the needs of our people. It will allow us to monitor and evaluate the impact of state policies on our people, and there will be ongoing truth-gathering and sharing activities across the state to build recognition of the experience of our people, as well as the strength and richness of our culture and knowledge. And this is that real realisation of that self-determination that I referred to earlier, where we have the political space and overall framework for both traditional owner and future statewide treaties. And this is the first. This is the infrastructure. And, of course, there's provision for ongoing treaty making, whether that be, you know, on topics like Aboriginal children and families or like healthcare. We also know that this isn't going to be an easy road as we step into this space. And there will be learning experiences, but it's one where we can learn together And one where it's not just about all of the wrong things, but it's also about all of those good things that our community do. You know, our incredible wins in healthcare, our incredible progress in education, and just our ways of being, knowing and doing, which have put our community in good stead.
Yeah, so in many ways, you know, obviously such a momentous occasion, but really just the kind of starting point of hopefully a changed trajectory in the way that in terms of this relationship reset that you've talked about.
Yeah, and that relationship reset can be seen in things like the fact for the first time there is going to be this Aboriginal body, this First Peoples Assembly Victoria, that will have rulemaking power in relation to confirmation of Aboriginality.
Yeah.
And so, you know, who we are as a community is incredibly important to us, and this gives us the ability to self-determine and make sure that there are those standards and those processes around protecting our identity. The second, obviously, relates to cultural water flows. And for us, water is life, and waterways are an essential connector between traditional owner groups that have, you know, obviously been interrupted by successive policies. But this is a chance for TO treaties and TO spaces to really step into that self-determination as well.
Yeah, fascinating. I want to sit back and have a big conversation with you about a few of those things. I live right along the Merri Creek, which I know was a place of joining and coming together, and yesteryear, and hopefully can be in terms of these acts of self-determination that are hopefully kind of more enabled through this treaty. And it's quite depressing to see such waterways kind of, you know, it's quite metaphorical in seeing how clogged or muddied they are from the kind of pollutants in those waters. But I'm just trying to put myself back together here, because you've left me wondering on a few different aspects of what you've said. But can we get a bit of a background from your perspective on what some of the key moments were, or the key steps that took place that led up to this historic treaty being agreed to? Obviously, it's been a long, long history, not only in regards to this treaty, but also the relationship reset and reframe more generally. But are there any kind of key moments for you that you look back on as thinking that was a really key kind of pivotal point in where we are today?
I think it is difficult to say that there was this one key moment that led to where we are. Treaty has been a long-held goal of our communities and our leaders since colonisation. And I think treaty really honours, and particularly the preamble talks to that history of resistance, advocacy and activism of First Peoples that's been carried for by our elders, our traditional owners, our Aboriginal community-controlled organisations. And that unwavering resilience and the tireless movements of First Peoples that, you know, really got us to this point. When you think particularly around William Barak, who was so close to negotiating the first treaty on the banks of the Merri Creek, or the Kamagunja walk-off, those are all significant moments of resistance where our people called for justice and called for treaty. But I think the first time perhaps the Victorian government, the key moment for them in committing to treaty was in 2016, where the state actually took and seized the opportunity to lead and established the Aboriginal Treaty Working Group and then the Victorian Treaty Investment Commission. And that work obviously then led to Australia's first treaty legislation, the Advancing Treaty Process with Aboriginal Victorians Act 2018, which obviously enshrined the state's commitment to pursuing treaty and establishment of an independent and democratically elected representative body for First Peoples, also known as the Assembly. Following that agreement, obviously the state continued to show leadership by establishing the treaty authority to ensure the treaty process is fair for all negotiating parties. And then, of course, continuing that leadership by sitting down and negotiating with First Peoples on this First Strike by Treaty. And, you know, I'm sure there were moments for them where they were unsure about whether or not they should continue this journey, but they got brave, they kept going, and now we've finally realised this long-held dream of having a treaty and having an opportunity to reset the relationship with the state, one where this is not about being in a bad relationship, so to speak. This is now about being in a true partnership, one where we recognise the strengths of each other, we see what each other can bring to the table, and we work for a common purpose for creating that better Victoria for us all.
Beautiful words there. And usually at this point of the show, I'm breathing smoke in anger just due to our usual topics, but it's a nice change of pace for me. So thank you very much, Narita. We are halftime during the show here at Done By Law, so we'll just take a quick break with a community service announcement. And after that community service announcement, I'm blowing smoke again, but welcome back to Done By Law on 3CR Community Radio. You're with Jimmy tonight, as well as our very special guest, Narita Waite, CEO of the Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service, as well as a key member of Victoria's First Peoples Assembly. We're discussing the process of treaty making in Victoria. Narita, before the break, you talked about the bravery that the Victorian government has shown in kind of sitting down and nutting out this process and seemingly approaching it with a high degree of good faith from what I heard from you, which is really heartening to hear. I want to kind of talk about the longevity and whether there's any risk of that longevity in this state. Like, for instance, if a Liberal state government gets into power in Victoria, which in my view is a very big if at the moment, but and we know that they do not support treaty, as we heard many of those comments just before the bill passed. Do you think there is a risk that the process can come to an end, or do you think that's something, or do we not want to think about such options at this time?
Look, Jimmy, I don't want to make you angrier, but I feel the need to answer your question honestly, and I suppose if I can link the previous question in as well. I think that a government can negotiate something in good faith but be a bad actor in other spaces. And in my space, in terms of justice, we have certainly seen this time and time again, and obviously most notably today. But in now moving to other bad actors in terms of Liberal state government, what could be a Liberal state government? Don't want to trigger you there, Jimmy. they've had change after change in terms of their leadership. But I do want to note that when the treaty bill passed, Jess Wilson did stand and applaud. I hope that perhaps she ignored that whilst she might not be willing to backtrack on their stated positions yet, she would at least be open to a conversation. And perhaps through actually understanding what treaty is and the potential it has, and that this is not a threat to her, this is not a threat to Victorians, this is something to be proud of, something that will have that hope for the future that she herself has espoused, we can change her mind and therefore their position. But if that doesn't happen, and, it may not, there is opportunity, of course, that if they do seek to either walk back treaty commitments rather than just repealing the legislation, that we can hold them to account either through the dispute resolution mechanisms through the Treaty Authority or through mechanisms like NIM and Manuwara, which allows us to engage in inquiries and, of course, research and evaluation as it relates to matters affecting First Peoples. I too, like you, don't want to think about it, but we do need to be prepared, and the First Peoples Assembly is doing that work to make sure that we can protect treaty and we can uphold that future that we all want to see.
Yeah. And I think what you've touched on there, and, you know, it helps inflame the cynic in me once again, but is that kind of duality of the government actor, that they can come in good faith on good terms with bravery on some aspects and then turn around maybe in, you know, the criminal justice space and other things like that and repeal laws or change laws that were put in place to protect things like Aboriginal deaths in custody or disproportionate issues on youth justice and things like that. And it's, I guess, from, you know, if we can merge, if treaty can have an impact on those bad action areas, if that's a term that's appropriate to use, I guess that's all the better to kind of inform that conversation. So just, can you spell it out for me and the listeners? If the treaty's made and then the government doesn't uphold their obligations under the treaty, what's the next steps in terms of addressing those unmet obligations?
Yeah, look, internationally, you know that protected treaty rights have been violated time and time again, and we can see that over the ditch, as they would say in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And there are various mechanisms to hold government to account through the legislation, including the establishment of the Gelling Wall,
mm-hmm.
the ongoing representative body, which will enable us to have a more meaningful access to government and make representations to government on the needs of our people. There's also, as I've referred to before, Ningma Nangyul Wara, which is the independent accountability mechanism, which enables us to have, you know, kind of I'm trying to find a way in which will not trigger our parliamentary colleagues, but in essence, there are, kind of hearing-style inquiry with government ministers where we can ask them questions as well as the usual inquiry processes and forms of functions. But there's also mechanisms for enforcing treaty or treaties, and that would involve the treaty authority, and that does require us to go through a dispute resolution pathway.
Mm.
That resolution pathway, of course, is a culturally appropriate process, and that's grounded within the treaty authority and the principles in which they've established. There are, of course, other enforcement mechanisms that are open to us. So in the further negotiation, this will head into the treaty authority. Or, of course, there is the Supreme Court. But I would hope that if a Labor government is returned in November 2026, that the leadership that we have seen in relation to negotiating treaty would continue in terms of having an ongoing treaty relationship. There will be times, whether it's on topics like law and order or others, where that relationship will be tested. But what will speak to the government's commitment is if we can walk through those testing times together, we can have open and frank conversations, and they are willing to be held to account for their failures as well as celebrated for their achievements.
Mm. Yeah, well, I'll keep my hopes high and my expectations low. I think that's the healthiest way for me to go about these things. But I do hear you there. It sounds like there's a few tests ahead, but hopefully this treaty is given the framework for those tests to be overcome harmoniously and in a united fashion for all Victorians. Going beyond Victoria now to other jurisdictions, other stolen lands, do you hope that this will be the beginning of other treaties being negotiated across other states and territories and at a federal level as well? I originally grew up on Whadjuk Noongar country, and I know there's calls there for kind of truth-telling in similar processes. And I wonder if, this kind of can set a benchmark to go from for other jurisdictions.
I would hope that other jurisdictions have seen Victoria walk through truth, have seen us enact voice, and now seen us achieve treaty, and seen that there's nothing to be afraid of, that this is an opportunity, and similarly enact pathways for their traditional owners to realise treaty. I do think, though, that whilst it's obviously too early to tell, we have seen other jurisdictions paying really close attention to what is going on here, proactively asking questions proactively seeking what's coming next. So perhaps the treaty's implemented and we might see continued leadership either from Labor or mine and yours, worst case scenario, Jimmy, a Liberal government, that they then too might see that treaty is successful, that treaty is the thing that actually drives change on the ground, and therefore partner with their TOs to achieve that in their jurisdiction.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, hopefully we hear more of that change in the coming months and years. I just want to sneak in one last question before we finish tonight's episode. Just in kind of within the context of the Uluru Statement of the Heart, and how you think Victoria's treaty here fits into the broader picture of the key asks made by the Uluru Statement, and whether you have any thoughts. I know it's kind of a vexed question at times, but on the order of treaty, truth-telling and voice and the importance of that. Sorry, it's not an easy, quick last question, I know. So
It's not an easy, quick last question, but I think it's also a question that kind of presupposes that the context in each jurisdiction would be the same. I think for us, we were able to obviously achieve voice in terms of the democratically elected First Peoples, which then led into negotiating truth in terms of the establishment then of URL, which is was our Truth-Telling Commission. And then, of course, that led, dovetailed really into treaty processes in terms of establishing the guardrails or treaty negotiation framework and then, of course, realising treaty. That worked for Victoria, and I think part of it was that that voice element was really important in calling and helping design the truth-telling process so that it was centred within Aboriginal communities and it was something that they could engage when it was safe, but then would also lead into informing what was going to be negotiated at treaty. That might be different, Jimmy, in other jurisdictions. They might feel first they need to go through truth, and then from truth they can establish their voice and then they can establish treaty. Or they might think that they want to go truth, treaty, voice. Yeah. I think it is very context dependent.
Yeah, and I think if... sorry to cut you off.
No, no, you go to me.
Well, I was just going to say, if there's anything to learn from Australia's history is the assumption of one voice for Australia's First Peoples has often led to a lot of the horror that we've seen in the impact of colonisation, I think.
I think that's definitely true. And I kind of want to leave you with some sense of hope, Jimmy, to get you through the week.
Thank you.
And even though... obviously, this is a pivotal moment and something that is looking hopeful. We also know that there are potential threats. And in considering those potential threats, what I want you to focus on is that Aboriginal communities, First Nations peoples, have been calling for their sovereign rights across Australia for hundreds of years, literally since colonisation. And we have not been ignored. We've never let ourselves be ignored. We've continued the fight. We have found ways to achieve change in small and meaningful ways and some in big transformational ways. And no matter the actions of any state government, we will continue that fight because our community is worth it and a safer state, safer place for us all is worth it.
Absolutely. You've done a lot for me personally today, Narita, in both my hopes and my expectations, a lot for Victoria, it seems, in the recent months and years. So thank you so much for coming on the show today. We are sadly out of time. To our listeners, if you haven't read the treaty, it should take about as much, if not less, time than listening to this show. Please visit the First Peoples Assembly's website. It is very beautiful. It is very easy to navigate, and it's very clear, I guess, what the final product is. Well, not the final product, the initial product of hopefully an ongoing and relationship reset. So thank you very much for coming on the show, Narita.
Not a problem. Thank you for having me.
You have been listening to Done by Law on 3CR 855 AM, streamed at 3cr.org.au. Done by Law will be back again next Tuesday at 6pm. Stay tuned now for the voices of West Papua.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.